episode of Comic Book Legion Podcast. Of course, I am one of your hosts, Clay, but I am always here with the, I guess, grandfather of, or, right? Yeah.
Damn, grandfather.
Well, hey.
I can't be the oldest.
I mean, let's face it. You had a pretty intense podcast before this whole thing started. So, like, I would... Godfather. How about that? How about Godfather? Let's...
Okay, wait. So you're saying me, like, the grandfather of, like, of podcasting? Because I've done it longer than you guys?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant that I was just really old. Like, I'm the oldest guy in the group. I'm pretty sure, based on how Comics Dude talks on the chat, and he's been reading comics, I think, like, 87 or something like that, I have a feeling that he's, like, really old, and he just has a sweet mohawk.
I think Kevin is the oldest.
No! Kevin's like 25.
No way.
Yeah, he's like 25. He's just old at heart. He's like a 60-year-old 20. Like,
I'm so sorry, Kevin.
Kevin, right now, I need to know. Like Kevin kind of like resembles, at least the way he chat. Like, if he was raised by grandparents, so he was just like... So he just has, you know, he has like that old man mentality.
Oh, man.
No, Kevin, he's like 26.
I am so sorry, Kevin.
If you guys have no idea why we keep on mentioning Kevin, Kevin is actually one of our contributors, Kevin, on our website.
I will say, Kevin is one of the most awesome people that I know. I know he gives me a hard time with all the conversations with Bendis and all of that, but he is such a cool guy, great reviewer, really enthusiastic about pretty much any big book that's out there right now. Really big advocate for the first book we're going to be talking about this week. But before that, just want to plug the last episode we had, which was really fun.
Yes, it was.
I don't know exactly where we clocked it at, but we were talking for a good amount of time. Me, you, and of course our contributor Jake, who stepped in when you were gone at MegaCon, just what, like last week, two weeks ago.
Yeah.
But,
talking about that episode, I just want to do a quick shout out to, Terrence Robinson at TJ Future CPA, because he realized that I finally changed my Twitter handle to @MarkReadsComics. Because I've been talking about that. I wanted to do it, but I've never changed it.
Oh, that's and what then your it post looks like was he's this also, morning. Okay.
Yes, exactly. And then it looks like he also listens to the Levitard Show, which is the sports show I was talking about. So, and he's like, fantasy football is always welcome. So I just wanted to shout him out. Thank you for listening to that episode that we did with Jake. And it was really cool. I mean, we talked to Batman, Clay wanting Bendis to write Bruce Wayne. What else? We talked fantasy football.
So I will say this, because... one of our other video contributors, Juice from the Box, was talking to me last night. I don't think we really touched on the Batcat book.
We really didn't. I think that is more of our issues of rambling.
Yeah.
Which could be the case. And we kind of just go, you know, from like thought to thought to thought.
Yeah.
But I mean, we can jump on it really quick. I mean,
we'll see.
Because I even think I posed the question if we actually thought that book was going to be Tom King's real ending to his story, or if he's kind of being forced to kind of change it up a bit.
So I think
I don't think we ever touched on it after
that. I think I alluded to like him not being able to finish his story, and I think that's more like that won't happen in the Batcat book, which I really hope it does, because even he, in his one statement that he made, seems pretty enthusiastic about it. I can't see him ever being the kind of person to not be enthusiastic and kind of throw DC under the bus. You know, then he wouldn't have a job. But, you know, I'm excited for the book, but I'm very hesitant on what I feel like the ending of that book will be. Because he relates it to Grant Morrison getting taken off of Batman and jumping on to Batman and Robin in the New 52. So, I don't know. I hope that this will be, like, a fair ending and something that Tom King legitimately wanted to do. as far as like the story that he's going to be telling.
Do you think they're going to cut City of Bane to give a little bit more of a clarity of what this Bat-Cat book is going to be?
I don't think they will cut it, because from what Tom King's plans are, and he's been very vocal about it, it ends at issue 85. Like, the actual ending, the finale, is at 85. And that's his last book. 86 would be the book that whoever is coming next will, you know, be on in January. So it'll literally, for anybody who wants to finish just Tom King's story, it'll be 85, and then I am betting 86 and Bat-Cat issue number 1 are going to come out the same week.
Probably, but that's what I mean. Like, do you think that they're going to have to shorten that story or do some major changes to it, because we're now asking the new writer to kind of follow up on what Tom King wanted to do?
Well, not really, just because, like, if you look at other writers coming in on a book for the long haul, the writers before then, if they don't get to finish the story that the way they want it to, they kind of rush it but still end it, and then the next issue kind of starts like a first reader friendly, and just kind of jumps into a new story. So I think,
yeah, I just think that it's like, with, I feel like it's always harder to do that with books that have been with one writer for like long form. And then, like, sometimes I feel like I don't know solicited wise when Doomsday Clock is supposed to end, but it's kind of like, to me, I can't see when having a book that one guy's been on it for 3 years, and then it's just going to be like, oh, Hoop Nally, it's 86, new writer. Like, I feel like there's going to be something different.
So, in the terms of Doomsday Clock, just because it goes every other month, technically,
yeah,
it should be, what's May, July, September would be the ending of Doomsday Clock. But with solicits, you go 2 months ahead for every month that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
So, this Wednesday, if you go to your comic shop right now, they have the previews, the large magazine, and those books are going to be for, I believe, August, I think. Yeah, it'll be for August. Yeah. So, because it'll technically be like June's previews or whatever. But but that's how that goes. But I honestly think that Tom King will kind of end the Bane finale as its own story.
Okay.
And then literally, like, whatever story comes next can just fall into it. I don't think that he'll have to put too much exposition.
Okay.
He may lay, like, a seed here and there.
Now, do you think we're going to get 86, or do you think we're going to get a number one?
I think that it's really hard, because we saw in Aquaman, I think 4 issues ago or 3 issues ago, it stayed with its regular numbering, but they put a big fat red number one on there to help new readers understand, oh, well, I can get this book because it's the start of a new story. I think they'll do that.
Yeah, it felt very similar to, like, if with the Death of Superman.
Yeah.
Like, Reign of the Superman, they always had, like, that little badge just letting you know, like, this is part 37 of, like, this story.
Yeah.
Kind of
thing. I think that it'll do the same thing. Instead of a red number one, they'll do a big, fat, yellow number one on the cover, but keep its original numbering with 100. I thought I heard or saw some people think that in 2020 they're going to go back to issue number ones all around.
Go monthly?
And go monthly.
For the most part?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen because, for one, you just had your two oldest books, like, hit 1,000.
Well, I don't think they're going to do that with the legacy books.
Well,
like, those two, And I think that, you know, once, I mean, honestly, I don't know which book would be next. I don't know if it's like a Wonder Woman.
I believe it's either Wonder Woman or Flash.
Yeah. So I think maybe once those, like, I could see it happening kind of like what they did where they go back to a number one, but when you're getting closer, they're going to say like, oh, we're now going to change it.
Yeah.
Because now marketing's always going to look better when you're approaching it, because they can always approach that 1,000.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm kind of reading all this stuff, and I'm really hopeful, because I'm curious to see how this is going to end. And it's also when you're so used to seeing Batman being done by a specific writer, you know, if you like it, if not, I mean,
it always feels
weird. You can't help but go into a new book and say like, man, this doesn't feel like what I know.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's like you kind of build a, you know, you build a relationship with this specific character based on it. You know, David Finch was there from the beginning, but he did the first couple of arcs, switching with Mikael Janin. But Mikael Janin's been there from the beginning. Tony Daniel has stepped up. Gerard has stepped up on some. Mm-hmm. Who else? Was it Tony Daniel?
You already said Tony Daniel. But Lee Weeks has been there too.
Lee Weeks. Forbes. There we go. Lee Weeks, George Foreman. Like, it's been like maybe in 80, I don't know, we're in the 70s. So in like 70 plus issues, we've only had like, in reality, like four artists rotating. Because Finch, I mean, he hasn't been there since.
Since the beginning. Oof. Since I am Bane or I Am Suicide.
Yeah, one of those.
Was probably
like,
his
you haven't
last
seen
one.
Him. So, it, I mean, it's been a while, and it's only been like four artists.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know, man. It's really exciting, but it's, you know, there's a lot of question marks. But talking about question marks, Heroes in Crisis, number 9.
The finale.
Tom King, Clayman. Man, I don't even know. Is it Tomo Morey?
Yeah.
I don't want to. Okay. Oh, wow. If I was right, that's awesome. This is it. This is the ending of Heroes in Crisis. This is the book that, unfortunately, will probably overshadow all the other books that have come out on this new comic book day for reasons unknown. Maybe it's because of the insane amount of Wally West fans who have feel that this character has, you know, has been destroyed. Or it's apparently for some reason the hatred that Tom King tends to generate, but overall in this picture, Heroes in Crisis number 9, what were your, just without going into all the details, what was like your initial thought of the book?
Initial thought of the book?
Like, you read it, you finished the last page.
I finished the last page, and because let me actually get to the last page to remind myself like what was the like actual shot that finished. So, I will say this, because, like, there's really cool ways to explain time travel, and then there's really stupid ways to explain time travel. And let me just say this, Tom King's, like, the way they've put Booster Gold out there,
mm-hmm.
that I think is one of my biggest nitpicks, is... Booster Gold used to be like this really cool, self-confident person. And I know that Tom King has kind of broken him down, but in a sense of like, to really understand who he, like himself, like, I think he broke him down like that, or for that reason. But the way Booster explained time travel here.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think that this guy has never time traveled in his entire life.
And I think that, yes, and I agree. And I think that that's one of the reasons why, like, even Wally kind of says, like, oh, it's going to sound even stupider.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think, like, this is, like, Tom's way of him kind of just rambling and just saying some kind of stuff. Because, you know, Tom doesn't, I feel like maybe he might not fully grasp it. So he's just trying to throw some concepts and themes in there. And just to make it kind of seem comedic and give Booster, but for those who know Booster, and obviously this guy knows his stuff, it kind of just makes him seem like a goof.
Yeah.
And like he doesn't really know what he's talking about. Now, for me, when I read this book, the first thing that I thought to myself was, man, I feel like Heroes in Crisis would have been a much better book to the eyes of many if maybe something like this was like issue 4 or 5.
Yes.
And then we were able to, because, you know, yes, am I going to, okay, yes, I love Tom King. Tom King, he's one of my favorite writers currently, and I enjoy his work. Do I think that all his work is masterpieces? No. Am I positive? Yes. I try to be positive because there's enough negativity out there where, you know, positivity can be used. So I try to just highlight the things that I liked. Now, in this book, are there tons of issues? Sure. Do I wish that we would have seen, you know, kind of instead of just at the ending, the Trinity? I mean, because besides Superman with that speech, which I will say is probably the best part of this book, which was that speech that he did, I think it was like issue 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Besides that, you don't really see anything. We had the whole mystery between the tensions between the Trinity and Bruce finding out that Clark knew about the recordings and that this went to Lois. You don't really get any of that kind of stuff. Yes, I get it. There are a gazillion plot holes here. And from somebody that I've been chatting with, he kind of mentioned, well, it seems that, you know, Tom didn't really entirely know how to end this. And maybe that could be why it feels like two completely different stories. You probably know who it is, but we won't say it.
Well, no. I want to take a guess off air because I think I know who it is.
Okay. Or you could just write it on a Sharpie and just tell me on the screen and I'll nod. anyways, so that could possibly be something. But to me, when I finished it, my initial thought, this would have been better if it was in the middle. And then we can deal with some of the other stuff. Because I was, when I saw that, like, Sanctuary reopened, and now you're kind of seeing, like, the heroes coming back in, and it kind of felt like this is what the book was supposed to be about, but they didn't really always highlight it. I think it would have been really nice to kind of highlight a lot of the characters that we haven't really seen in the DCU. And kind of just talk about some stuff and actually highlight what the book was supposed to be about initially, which was, you know, kind of talking about mental illness and you know, this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I wish that. But, like, I'll be damned to say that I did not feel something when you see, you know, future Wally talking to Wally.
Yeah. Dude, the amount of emotion that was in that conversation between both Wallys. And I hope I don't choke up here, because I almost did reading the whole thing. There might be people out there that can legitimately say that they're fortunate enough to not to have gone through, like, really big things in their lives as far as, like, depression or, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
This, like, legitimately broke my heart, because there,
yes,
for me, I literally just told you, you know, before, you know, we started recording, and I'm completely okay with being open about this. There was a time in my life where I was couch hopping for like 3 years. That was depressing, like, sucked, you know, big part of my life. And so I'm not gonna say that that's equal to being, you know, sad and depressed about losing my entire family and then killing 15 heroes. I'm not going to say that that's going to equal that, but I am going to say that the range of mental health is based on the individual, and it's not any less important. And that itself was one of the biggest pictures in this ending with both, yes, Wallys. And even when you learned about what happened and how Wally ended up doing all this, he felt that he was alone and in a weird way needed to know that there was other people just as depressed as he was.
Yes. And I think that that's what was really nice when you see the future Wally kind of like highlighting, and when he's giving him examples, they're highlighting what like those certain characters are and like what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
Now, yes, We've highlighted this before. We've seen in the Titans that his best friends have said, you are not alone.
Yeah.
But there is no... To me, like, I try to take a realistic point of view. And no matter what you're going through, yes, you can have that great day that you're with friends, you have felt the love and you have felt the support, but then situations in life can always kind of trigger those situations back, especially if it, even though it was a beautiful moment, there hasn't been complete healing.
Yeah.
Because that moment with the Titans was way before Flash Wars when he was introduced to the fact that he had kids.
Yeah.
And he kind of like remembered it, you know?
Yeah.
So like that right there can kind of totally get everything going back. And sometimes it might be, this is one of the things that I love hearing, which is sometimes when you are trying to like talk to someone or console someone or preach to someone, sometimes the words that you're speaking to them are the words, the exact words that you actually should be the one hearing.
Yeah.
And I think that this can be one of those facts that maybe Wally just needed to hear it from Wally. Like he needed to hear it from himself and hear himself say this. Because sometimes you can be going through stuff, but the healing actually doesn't start until you start speaking, until you actually say things out loud.
Yeah.
You can't just internalize everything.
Yeah.
So I think with him actually hearing himself say it in a very trippy way, but it's so Flash that it makes sense, that to me, I thought it was really nice seeing those moments with Harley and Poison Ivy. I thought was really nice seeing the bros before heroes. I really liked that too. Like there was a lot to like, but there's, you know, also some, you know, some stuff to not like.
Yeah.
But I understand those. I don't get the outrage. I think outrage is just the new word for like toxic. Like now it's just, outrage is just the social media word. And that just, I feel like people just search outrage just to see what's the thing to comment on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that, but I do see that there is a lot to celebrate with the book, and that's what I think is worth highlighting. But again, I can say that it's not his best.
Yeah.
But I will say that if a book can grab you a certain way and kind of like twist at your heart and you're kind of like, ooh, I felt that. That felt a little too deep. Like, I think it did a good job. Like, for that. Even though the other stuff could be a little muddled.
For sure.
But,
for sure. I think that with this, there's going to be, like you said, a lot of outrage. Because, unfortunately, there's just a lot of Twitter that cannot let things go.
I love that. There's a lot of Twitter. I love that.
There's a lot of Twitter that just can't let things go. And, you know, we discussed this and you even questioned it on Twitter as well, is I don't know why people hate Reed. I can't find myself to hate Reed because when I read comics, I want to enjoy it. So I try to enjoy anything and everything that I read. Now, there's a part of a book that we're going to talk about this week that I completely skipped because I didn't like it. But
oh snap!
Yeah, we will get to that when it comes to it. But
Ben has to do with Bendis. Jeez, this guy. No, I don't know. Actually,
well, I think the part that I skipped is actually going to get you upset because I think you were I think you were a fan of it. But let's move on.
It better not be Jimmy Olsen. I will fight you to the death. No, I'm joking.
Let's move on to...
Damn, he didn't even deny it. Okay.
Let's move on to Batman, The Last Knight on Earth.
God, I love this book.
Mark, this honestly has to be the crazy... Like, it's issue number one, and I think this is the craziest Batman story I've ever read.
Dude, this is crazier than Metal.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
And Metal was supposed to be crazy on purpose. Like he wanted to, Snyder even said, I want to, this is rock and roll, this is metal, this is just Jack Kirby, this is
Mark, I just had a thought.
What happened?
What if the Batman Who Laughs is in the
I mean,
how many issues is this going to be?
Three.
It's only three?
Yeah.
But see, they're 50 pages, so...
Yeah, so I mean, it's three, but it's technically, I guess you could say, like six, if you want to go by like pages. Actually, a little bit more than six.
Yeah. Man, with how crazy it is now with just this first issue to add the Batman Who Laughs either at the end or the beginning of issue two and
now,
three.
Now, I would say this. I hope not.
Like, it would legitimately have to do something really clever with the character.
Like this Joker, yeah, it's like this Joker to me that's in the jar represents Batman and Joker in Snyder and Capullo's world.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So it's kind of like, even though Metal has done a big job and it's influenced kind of like where the DCU is currently, I don't think that that takes away from the, I don't know, the 7-8 years of Snyder Capullo beforehand, before that. So that's why I would say that I don't want to see it, because I don't want him to get in the way of this, because this is like a very twisted bromance, and I love it.
Yeah. So let me just run down last night. So
is it, wait, last night before Assassin's Creed Odyssey?
Oh man, dude, my eyes still feel heavy from staying up so late from playing that game.
If anyone has played Assassin's Creed Odyssey, that's going to be the question of this week. Did you play as Alexios or Cassandra? We wanted to know.
Oh, yeah.
Just because I'm curious. Because the more I see it, I feel like I'm the only dude that played Alexios. Just because I thought Alexios was a cool name.
Well, for me, I thought that, like, in the real world version, like, part of that game, your character, or the main character, is a woman. So I was like, oh, well, it's going to make more sense if she plays as Cassandra.
Well, yeah.
That was my
thing.
Well,
I didn't... But the thing is, like, you know, just like in comics, I don't do solicits. I don't do, like, reading stuff in video games either. Because I feel like that takes away things from me for some reason. Just like in movies with all these trailers and these clips, I've gotten to that point where I want to try to live as close to the 90s as I can. Which is, let me see, like, a cover. Let me see who's on it. And I'll figure out what it is there. And then once I'm in it, I'll decide if I like it or not.
Nice.
Like, that's kind of how I am. Because if not, I feel like I know 80% of something beforehand. So I really just need shock value for me to think of something. Like, oh, that was different. Anyways.
But
Batman Who Laughs.
But Batman Who Laughs.
Last night.
The Batman Who... Last Night on Earth. So we start off with Bruce Batman being very, like, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Very determined to get this person that they've been on the hunt for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And you see this person chalking out, you know, lines on the road, and Batman has actually been mapping this chalk, and it actually shows up like a bird's eye view of the city. And it's actually an outline of a dead Batman. And the heart of that Batman is, what is it, Crime Alley? Or
Crime Alley.
Yeah.
I love that. I love, like, those small details that, like, writers do that I really appreciate. Like, what makes you think, like, oh, I'm just going to do, like, a chalk line and do a dead body. It's going to look like a Batman. And, oh, it just so happens that the heartbeat is exactly in Crime Alley. Like, I think that... I don't know, man. Sometimes, like, panels like these are where I think writers deserve so much credit for just good usage and just being creative.
Oh, yeah.
And that might not be creative at all, and maybe I'm just a very simple, like, a simplistic dude. But I actually find that stuff not, like, genius, but I'm like, man, that's, like, it's a really cool panel. Like, have you ever watched movies? This is me rambling. Have you ever watched movies and you're just, like, randomly seeing cinematography... But it's kind of like someone's driving through the city and they just have like a really cool camera shot of like the wheel.
Oh yeah, no, there's
and you're like, what the hell is this? But it looks great.
There's a lot of like for me, I went to one film class when I was a caregiver for this individual. He was in college and he wanted to take a film class, so I technically had to take it also. And I learned so much in film that I could legitimately appreciate, like, actual movies in a way that I've never done before. I have to give it up to cinematography, dude. It is amazing. Like, the things that they Seriously. Can do with yes. a camera is legitimately crazy. And it's really cool here just because, like, it's not like it's one big bird's eye view of the chalk or whatever. It's little yeah. pictures of, like, both day and night and mm-hmm. and that he put together. And he's like, oh, this is an outline of Batman, you know. But, you know, Alfred has a weird feeling about this, you know, whole investigation. And he tells Bruce to be careful. And Bruce actually goes to Crime Alley, finds that there's this person in the road, goes up, moves the umbrella, and it's like this decomposed, zombified kid.
Mm.
And the kid is dead. He's already said that. But
I figured they would have gotten that if you said zombified.
Yeah. Well, like, zombified means that, like, the kid may still be, like, undead, but it's not.
Okay. I got
He's decomposed. He's dead. But there's a mechanic in his arm that makes his arm, like, move up, and he has a gun in his hand, and all you see is the bang, and then you see Bruce in a, like, all wrapped up, and he's in the hospital bed, and you see this guy that looks legitimately like the Joker, who is, like, claiming that he's his doctor, and, you know, Alfred comes in, and they're saying that everything that Bruce has ever made up as far as, like, the world of Batman is all fake, and Bruce can't speak correctly because he's apparently been in this coma for so many years, and he's freaking out, and dude, my brain is literally turning into mush.
Well, first, mine was not only because I was trying to understand what the hell's going on, and I'm like, dude, that's the freaking Joker, but I was honestly, my first thought was, as good as Greg Capullo is with utilizing the color black, he is equally as good just using white.
Oh, yeah. No, like, I think that was freaking me out a little bit more because, for me, I personally don't like hospitals. So just, like, how real this felt.
Yeah.
It was, oh, man, so...
Yeah, and then seeing the mosquitoes, or I'm not mosquitoes, like the flies.
Dude,
for some reason,
it
immediately brought me to, like, it reminded me of, like, Regression for the Image comic book,
uh-huh.
which has, like, a lot of, what's the word with, like, a gore? Like, body gore? Like, I feel like there's a word.
Mutilation? With, like,
no, but it says something gore, but it has to do with, like, when the body is just, like, yeah, when you're just seeing, like, flies and worms coming out of people's mouths
oh,
and
okay,
stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a certain word for it, and for some reason, it immediately brought me to that, where I was like, oh my god, are we going to get something like that? Like, what was the purpose of the fly? So that part immediately started getting me on top of the beautiful, haunting white imagery.
Yeah, and so they have to sedate Bruce because he starts to get a little aggressive. And he's in his cell, and he finds a crack in the wall, and he starts to dig at it, and he pokes at it. And he finds the dinosaur and the penny, like, just in there. Like, but they're smaller versions, of course. And, like, that freaks him out even more. And he visits Bruce again. He visits Alfred. Alfred is still... I'm explaining all this because this legitimately is a book that has to be explained.
Did this book to you feel like a great pilot episode for, like, a TV show?
Dude, this, I would legitimately want this to be a rated R animated movie that they come up with.
Yes. Like, when I got there, and it's kind of like if you know the story of Bruce, and you're just seeing there, and you're seeing, like, the Rogues Gallery, where you're seeing kind of like Harley, you're seeing it looks like Bane. I don't know if that was Bane or, like, Solomon Grundy, that he looks like he's, like, the transporter, like the patient.
I think that was Bane.
Like, Bane. You have, like, Dr. Al Ghul.
Yeah.
Like, there was such nice, like, little nods yeah. to his entire Rogue Gallery. And you could see it. It's, like, subtle, but you 100% know it's there.
But, like... With Alfred showing Bruce, oh, this is your cowl, and it's like the straitjacket attached to a cowl, and like, mm-hmm. oh, this is what we use to, you know, help you, you know, mend with, you know, your insanity, basically.
Yeah.
And he takes the cowl and he beats everybody up inside, you know, Arkham Asylum. And he, you know, finally gets to the top level. And it's just him and Alfred again. And Alfred is like, Bruce, I have to tell you the truth. And he, like, takes off the digital mask. And
well, he actually, Bruce actually already had an idea because of his, like, his heartbeat all and that, all that kind of stuff. Like, he knew that he was older.
He explains that immediately after, but he, like, takes off the digital mask. Alfred is old. Old.
That was actually really sad.
Yeah, dude.
Like, seeing him so old.
I was like, what in the world is going on? And it explains, and we were just talking about this beforehand, because you weren't necessarily 100%, you know, what in the world was going on. This goes back all the way to issue 43 of New 52, when Alfred explained in issue 43 to a younger Clark, when Batman was basically gone, you know, after Endgame or whatever, there was this thing called the Last Invention. And he explained to Clark that Bruce and him made this Last Invention so that way the consciousness of Bruce would always live on and there would always be a Batman no matter what. So he explains to Bruce that he is a new Bruce. So the Bruce Wayne that we saw on the first few pages, he is dead. He is shot dead.
That's the part that got me. I was like, because you're seeing everyone getting older, but I'm like, wait, did they actually kill Bruce? Like the Bruce that we know? So that's the part that I was like, wait. I'm like, Clay, I needed clarification. I'm like, dude, is this like the Bruce that, like, did they actually go back to the machine and revive? And this is a new Bruce Wayne. He's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, snap. So they actually killed him, because you wouldn't think of Bruce actually getting bested in one of those kind of ways where he sees a decomposing body of a little boy that kind of looks like him with the umbrella hiding and all that kind of. I'm like, there's no way that would have killed him. But I'm like, man, this looks like a really young Bruce. So I was honest. I got a little thrown off. I needed to make sure that I was kind of thinking, because I wasn't positive. So, you know, luckily you 100% were able to, you know, pick that up, because I needed to ask.
I think that I was able to pick it up because, and surprisingly, this has been going around Twitter for the past like month or two. The interest of Snyder's run in New 52 has been taking hold of Twitter again, and a lot of people have been reading it. I just recently finished it, so that's why I was able to remember that so well. So I was like, oh, boom, I remember that, you know? So
yeah.
I highly recommend for anybody who, because this is technically, from what Snyder is saying, this is his last solo Batman story. Now, will it be his last overall, you know, ever? That's hard to say, because, you know, there's...
I feel like this is kind of like the last him and maybe Greg. Like, this, in terms of Batman together.
Well, no,
because you might be able to get Batman and maybe something with Jock, even though Snyder did mention that he did talk to Jock, and he said that if Jock was doing the Batman Who Laughs with him, if you do this with me, then we'll do Witches right after, which I'm really excited, because Witches 1 was amazing, so I'm very excited for the sequel.
So, you know, with this, he, you know, he takes the cowl and he escapes Arkham, but, like, it's underground, and so he claws his way out, and he's, like, in a desert, but when he gets to a certain point in that desert, he finds Joker's head in a jar, and this is the best Joker I've ever read.
He's so awesome.
Because he is legitimately insane. Just imagine Joker's head in a jar, and then stuck in that jar for like 40 years or 20 years or however long it's been. That's hilarious. He is literally, like, on top of being insane, he's been cooking in this jar and has had literally nobody to talk to.
This is the This is Shrek and Donkey.
Yes.
Where you got a Batman who's just trying to figure things out. He's on a quest, like Shrek wanting to get his swamp, and you just got the rambling sidekick that is just saying the most randomest things. He's just talking. It's also great to see that with it being mature readers, you can kind of have a little bit more of mature verbiage.
Oh, yeah.
Verbiage.
And he's like,
so that makes it even better.
And like, he's like, oh, well, you know, like throughout the book, he's like, oh, I, you know, this entire time I was waiting for you, I wrote a song for you. I wrote a poem. And he starts to say a poem. He's like, oh, wait, that's not it. Hold on. Is that it? Oh, wait, I think I stole that from somebody. And it's just, dude, it's so funny. And I think it's more funny because Bruce is so into trying to figure out what the hell's going on around the entire world or in his own life right now that he's just like, Joker, I'm going to tolerate you and then I'm going to figure everything else out. So he's legitimately not like, okay, you're going to be my, you know, my guide, basically. But throughout the rest of the book, he goes to Coast City. He finds out that there has been, like, there was a war that, like, Green Lanterns actually lost, and their rings couldn't go to anybody because the planet Mogo was actually drained of its power.
By Brainiac.
Dude, so many things happened in this time that Bruce was
like,
gone.
We need a spinoff. We need this war to happen.
And so it's weird because like the rings almost have a life of their own, and have taken control of just like dead bodies.
Yeah.
And they have a will of their own. And there's like giant Green Lantern babies that like try to squash Batman and Joker, but they get saved by Vixen and Poison Ivy, which take them to their underground hideout or whatever, where you see the Amazons, which is Kara, Donna Troy, Poison Ivy and Vixen, and they're led by Diana.
Oh, and she looked great.
With her mohawk, it looks so good.
Yeah, she looked great.
And so Diana gives the history lesson to this Bruce, and she actually has Bruce Wayne's Batman outfit, and she gives it to him. And, you know, they explain, hey, stuff is going to go down. The best way to do this is to, we're opening a realm into the underworld and we're going to live with Hades for the end of time. Like that is their best option in her eyes.
Yeah.
And that is insane.
And this is all, and she also explained to Bruce who this new enemy, which is somebody by the name of like Omega. And it looks like, and you even show him like there's actually like a picture where he is literally holding the head with like some others, at least the silhouette of like Darkseid.
Yes.
And it looks like he has found like a new improvement towards the anti-life equation. So this is going to be, this is promising to be, you know, huge. Like I'm really, really excited to see what's going to happen at the end of this. Because honestly, it's like, Snyder's one of those guys that I never know how the heck is he going to top what he's done, but he has always really found a way. But I got to say that I'm all for this. I am 100% all for this. I feel like I need more Black Label because I love that they're willing to go a little bit further and bring a little bit more of an edginess to these kind of books.
Speaking of Black Label, just going to make this one comment. Because everybody thought that it was canceled and we would never see it again. Jim Lee just posted art for the variant for Damn 3. So,
yeah, I was confused because that book was supposed to, I think, come out on the 22nd.
Yeah.
But it hasn't come out. So it's going to come out. I want it to come out. I need it because I actually enjoy that story. So I really want to see how it ends. Mm-hmm. But in terms of this, man, Batman Last Night, I would like easily, I can easily say that Batman Last Night, just because of everything that it was my, and this is with a week that also Doomsday Clock came out, I would say that this book, Batman Last Night, was my pick of the week. It was like my number one. Like, from visuals to storytelling to kind of keeping me on an edge of my seat for a good portion of like the 60 pages that this book is, it was amazing.
Dude, it is a, like, between the craziness of Last Night on Earth and the intense build up to what Doomsday Clock is doing right now. Like, it was a hard decision, but I do believe Batman Last Night on Earth is the pick of the week for me, for sure.
Yeah. So going into, which I believe is going to be the book that's going to rile up Clay, I believe. I mean, I could be wrong, and it could be Doomsday Clock, but I mean, he just said that it was very close and that Doomsday Clock could have been, you know, his pick of the week. So I'm going to venture to say that Superman Leviathan Rising is what we're going to be talking about next. And this is, of course, the big event that Brian Michael Bendis has been leading up to with his Action Comics run. But in this book, he's joined by Greg Rucka, Matt Fraction, who, if you don't know, Greg Rucka will be taking and doing his own 12-issue story on Lois Lane, while Matt Fraction will be doing the same, but for Jimmy Olsen. They're also joined by Mark Andreyko in the writing department, and then it's Yannick Paquette, I want to say it's Mike Perkins, Steve Lieber, are mainly on the art duties with, I'm drawing a blank on who's on colors. But now in this book,
Fairbairn
is, yes, it's Fairbairn. I just don't know their first names.
Nathan.
Fairbairn's Mount, Placencia, and Ferreira. And I think Pansica.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're on art duties. I apologize. I don't know their first names. But this book all begins with, here we are. It's the epic struggle to control the DC universe. So this is just, these are the kind of, when it comes to, I guess you could say, novels. I love Vince Flynn. I'm a big Tom Clancy guy. I like reading Brad Thor. I love espionage. I love, like, the underground circuits, like the splinter cells. I like those kind of things. And this might be one of the big reasons why I really enjoy Action Comics, on top of it being just a Superman book, is because I love knowing that there is a lot of underground stuff happening.
Yeah.
And that, to me, always gets me really excited. Now, for me, I can easily say that just because of how crazy it was, I had a lot of fun with the Jimmy Olsen story. But I will say that having two mysterious characters, because we don't know much about this this Miss Leon lady, and which is, because I think we've only seen her, was that Action Comics 1000 what?
1000.
That she runs up like four?
I think it was
1003.
1004? 1005. Actually, you know what?
Okay. So you see her, because we were always trying to figure out who is the Red Cloud. We're trying to find out the Red Cloud. We find out that it is indeed Robinson Good, who is now trying to be the next Lois Lane. And it seems like that's what Percy White is trying to turn her into. but in the meantime, she runs into this lady, Miss Leon, who actually happens to have the car from Action Comics number one. So she plays an integral part in everything that's happening. We just don't know what yet.
Yeah.
I got very excited when I saw the book, because seeing her, she's kind of like in a book with antiques, and you happen to see her, and I kind of teased it saying like a Superman Leviathan Rising without context, which is actually the book that she was looking at, which is the number one issue of Brave and the Bold.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that was really cool, and I thought that was a nice little nod. But she gets introduced to somebody, and she finds out that this person is indeed Leviathan, but you can't really tell who it is because they're not exactly like Spiral where everything looks mumbled, but the technology is to the part where they can just change their faces and obviously also their facial hair. So I'm actually really curious to see who is this character, but I was actually, in a way, when you saw Miss Leon and she said, well, is this how my undoing's going to be? Did you actually think that they were going to kill her? Just to kind of show how, what this group means? Because I was definitely getting kind of like Supreme Leader Snoke vibes, that everybody was like, oh man, this is going to be a big character, and then they're just going to kill him off just to kind of prop up someone else.
I had the thought, but my immediate thought also was Snoke, and I'm like, no, DC, I don't think DC would do that. Especially because they gave her such a big like exposition in the beginning of Action Comics of this run.
Yeah.
I don't think Bendis would have done that. But one of my nitpicks, because I said in the Slack chat like early this weekend that I had nitpicks. One of my nitpicks is they were saying in the book that Leviathan was using technology that they've never seen before, or that doesn't exist. And they were talking about the face changer or whatever. Batman literally has that. Literally. And it was established in New 52, and they have it all the way up until in the far-off future and last night, because freaking Alfred used it on the digital face mask. Like, they literally have it. But that's...
Well... yes, I can see. Well, I mean, but there's many people that have these kind of things, but I think what they're just trying to say is that, you know, they have a specific technology that nobody has. So I think that they're just trying to, I think that they're trying to prop it up in that way, because yes, I thought of like, dude, I thought the same thing. I'm like, Batman has done this a gazillion times.
Yeah.
And this is nothing new. So my way of looking at it was that they're just using something else that I feel that they're propping it. And in a way, I was like, wait, are we going to get like a Skrulls kind of situation where this technology is going to be kind of like infiltrating where we can't trust who we're actually seeing on the pages?
Yeah.
That's kind of like what I was thinking. But instead of them being alien beings, it's going to just be something else.
Yeah. But, you know, in this book, we find out that Miss Leon and Leviathan, they have a discussion about how to take down the big guy, because they're not allowed to say names.
I love that, actually.
And it's a very clever thing, but like they said, he's always talking about it. And so, they're always talking like that, and that he's always listening. So for me, as Superman, I would think they are clearly talking about me. You know?
Yeah, I think, but it's just that since he has so many conversations that he can potentially listen to, I think it's just that the first thing that he tries to do is he has like code words that, well, yeah, keywords that he, that triggers.
I was thinking more of, you know, I had that initial thought and I'm like, oh, well, you know, he also needs probable cause to like burst in and do things. So having discussions about him isn't illegal. So I can see, you know, all of that, but it moves on to, cause Leviathan says something about, oh, then what you need to do is you need to capture him using bait, and but not, you need to use a trap with that doesn't look like a trap, basically.
Yes.
And they end up capturing Clark in order to try to capture Superman. But my thought is Leviathan's gotta know who Clark is, right? Do you think that they do?
Based on the way that it played out, I'm going to say no. Unless they're... Because, I mean, you would think... I would think that they should. Because if Robinson Good was able to kind of find out that Clark was Superman by her own little suspicions, and now you have some of the biggest killers in the world, such as Talia al Ghul, seeing clearly how he's reacting with this kryptonite, and they're not really... They're still kind of, I guess you could say in a sense, not knowing? I would find disappointing on the end of the villains. But maybe, again, they're trying to play it off as... Because in the end, it kind of seems that Leviathan and Talia al Ghul have two different motives.
Well, I think more so because I think this guy that is Leviathan, that is claiming to be Leviathan, I think he's a new player in the actual organization of Leviathan. And I think that Talia feels that her position is being taken over. And so she tried to make a decision on her own. And this guy was like, yeah, we're not having that.
Yes. But I will say that before the kidnapping, I do love the moment where Lois is speaking with Clark. And she's kind of talking to him because he's like, you know what? I'm going to play along just so I can kind of see what's going on because this is going to be my story. I love the competition between Lois and Clark on in terms of like there being a writer who's going to come up and break the big story.
Like, I like that very much. The one thing I didn't like in this book was the over-exaggeration of Clark not being able to act. Because if that was the case, everybody would know he was super.
Yes. I mean, yes. Okay. I guess I can see it. I found it in a way where I guess I just found it a little bit more humorous where.
Well, I know that it was supposed to be funny.
Seeing like a Superman where, you know, sometimes he probably just doesn't act as good when it could just be with like a civilian and you're pretending to be hurt. It's kind of like with Latin. I mean, you're Hispanic. I don't know if you've ever been hit by like la chancleta from like a grandma.
Oh, yeah.
But those things don't hurt, but you kind of have to pretend that it hurts so that the grandma would stop hitting you. So I feel like it's one of those things where you're like, ay, 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 but it doesn't.
Yeah.
So at first, I don't know, I found it kind of funny. When it bothered me was when they tried to revisit it and Wonder Woman was now saying like, oh God, is he pretending?
Yeah.
That's when it was annoying.
Like
it was kind of cute at the first time because it's like wife-husband banter.
I was afraid that, you know, after I saw Wonder Woman say that he couldn't act when they revisited it, I was afraid that it was going to be a reoccurring thing.
Yes, I thought it was going to be reoccurring, but then I was like, oh, God. You know, it's kind of like Wonder Woman was also with Clark in New 52, and even though this, you know, Superman that we have here is like an infused and the red and the blue, the entities with Reborn, I was kind of like, oh, God, I didn't know where that was going to go.
Yeah.
Because in a way, that can be like double meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And he legit said it to his wife, and they knew already, kind of like the dealio. So that was strange. But besides that, I like that, again, it shows the quick wit with Lois, that she knew something was going on. Like, she knows her husband. She knows that something definitely goes on just by the way that the mail was being positioned. I like how little by little it shows the text messages that she's getting from Jimmy. Jimmy asking for $10,000. I'm like, man, what the hell's going on with Jimmy? You know, like that was kind of cool because it led into where Lois in her story that you could see that this was Greg Rucka writing it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's working with Batman, kind of telling him everything that's going on. She explained to Batman. Batman did his own investigation and he seems like, yes, there is definitely something. Then leads to, I'm like, okay, well, if this is going to be, I love the tone of this Lois Lane book, and I hope that this is the art that you're getting in that book,
uh-huh.
Because it looks, it's very grounded. It's very dark, and I really dug that. I absolutely loved the Jimmy Olsen story. Now, yes, I will say that Jimmy Olsen is, again, being portrayed completely different than how you see him in other books. And that's, Jimmy Olsen has been very inconsistent in his portrayal. I will say that 100% for sure.
Uh-huh.
But for some reason, this book felt like a really cool indie, like an indie offshoot kind of thing where it kind of is like in one of those adventures of Jimmy Olsen, Superman's best pal. And it's kind of like Jimmy's just getting in some random crap because it kind of felt very similar to that.
Uh-huh.
Now, again, it doesn't feel like Jimmy Olsen at all. I will say that. But it was just a story where it's kind of wacky. I love the fact that it is Jimmy. And then seeing him with, Atrocity's cat.
Dexter?
Dexter, yes. I was like, Dexter? I'm like, Dexto? No, like, seeing Dexter, like, I don't know. I found it, like, endearing. And it felt like, yes, I know Matt Fraction's doing this, but in a way, I don't know why, I was like, dude, is he going to do something with Jimmy Olsen that I'm like, this isn't David Aja? But I don't know why. I kind of got Hawkeye vibes from, like, his Marvel run.
That's what I saw people say on Twitter, that, oh, my gosh, Jimmy's going to be the new Hawkeye for DC.
I think it's more because of the tone on how the book looks, like how it's presented.
Yeah. I will say this is the part that I skipped.
You skipped the Jimmy Olsen stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, in a way, it's not like it's...
It wasn't too important to the actual event story, the Superman special.
No, not at all. And it just gives you a nice little preview of what his story is going to be.
It gives you a nice little preview, but I feel like there's somewhat of an explanation in here that... And you might be able to help me out. Because the next time you see Jimmy, he's with Firestorm and...
They don't explain it because he's in his classic ape suit
and I'm just like maybe I should have read that.
Yeah, they didn't. So the only thing is, I don't know if this stuff's going to get revisited in the, you know, in the main run, or this is just to give you kind of like an idea of what the book is supposed to be.
Yeah,
like their run, and it's either you either dig the style or you don't. So I'm not entirely sure, because the only thing that they mention is him asking Lois for the 10,000.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because with the girl that you see in the very beginning, she is kind of like a time jumper where she's just, you know, she kind of like steals valuables, and she actually stole Jimmy's wallet. But they must have had a crazy night with the Gorilla Champagne, because they're in the Gorilla City. And yeah, so he got pretty much robbed. So he has nothing. So he was asking Lois for money so that he can get back. And as you can see with him meeting Dexter absolutely ripped all his clothes. So he's just completely in a really, really bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
But then when Jimmy showed up, I saw Lois, the way that Lois was dressed. I was like, wait, what is happening? So I think that you shouldn't really take those side stories together. Like, if it's all continuity,
mm-hmm.
in a sense, because they don't really go together.
Okay. But we go from there to back to Clark. He is rescued by Jimmy, Firestorm, and Lois, which, like, Clark sees them burst through the storm through the door, and he's like, "Are you Wildstorm?" And I felt like that was a throwaway line, because Wildstorm was just announced and is being solicited for August, which I've, like I said, with throwaway lines like that, I don't really appreciate them as far as like, oh, that's so cool, he just said Wildstorm. I just felt like it wasn't very clever in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they get the kryptonite off. They, you know, they tell him, hey, can you see who this person is? He, like, tries to use his X-ray vision, but his powers aren't 100% yet. But he is able to fly and things like that, and he tries to chase them. That's when Leviathan kicks Talia al Ghul out of the plane. Superman saves her, and he's trying to investigate and say, hey, who are these people? What do they want? What's going on? And she's like, you can take me to prison. It's okay. And she's unable to speak. Like, they just tried to kill her. And she's mm-hmm. still not wanting to rat them out. So, like, I will say, Talia is a cold-blooded woman. So,
yes, 100%. And I'm actually really curious, because do you know with like the Supergirl story? Because I haven't really been reading Supergirl.
Oh, well, with that,
so like all this
that
like Eliza and Jeremiah. Okay, clearly they were part of DEO. Which was, they ended up leaving early, and they got there before they realized what Director Bones was really
responsible
for.
This kind of opens my eyes up a little bit in a weird, like, this whole Action Comics story that we've been reading from 1001 to now has been in a realm of 3 months, even though it's been a little bit longer, because it explains, like, 3 months ago or whatever. Kara has been gone for 3 months worth of time, and she is, like, basically, it's just telling their story while Kara was gone. So you never even saw this in the Supergirl book, like, at all. So this,
yeah, because Supergirl for a while since Bendis has taken over, she's been literally
in space
playing like the background role and dealing with the destruction of learning the truth of what Rogel Zar did with Krypton. Yeah. So she's been dealing with a lot of the background stuff of what you've been seeing in the Superman books. Uh-huh. So for that, I found it really interesting. But again, I didn't know if Eliza or Jeremiah, since I'm not really reading Supergirl, if they play big parts in her book.
They did in the beginning of Supergirl before it got canceled. Because it did get canceled at one point at like issue 19 or 20 or 21 or something like that. But then it came back like at that exact numbering or whatever. So the whole thing with that was just a little bit of like, hey, we're going to tell a little bit about the DEO so that way and Kara's story, so that way possibly, so that way Kara can, you know, be caught up with everything. I think that's really the only reason why. But with one of the other greatest stories this week was Doomsday Clock. This story, for me, when I saw this cover with this person on the floor, the little chess piece on the ground, I immediately was like, oh my god, Checkmate is going to be a part of this story. This is going to be so amazing. That has nothing to do with Checkmate whatsoever.
I actually, when I saw this cover, my thought was, oh god, we're in issue 10. We only have 2 issues. Is this entire story going to be about this freaking TV show movie thing that keeps on being played like in the background?
I didn't. Like, honestly, because of how long it's been since the last book, I completely forgot about the TV show until it was reintroduced in the beginning of this book.
Yeah, because my biggest thing is I keep on saying, what is the deal with this freaking movie? Why are we following this Detective Nathaniel guy, this Nate dude? I don't care about him. Now I do.
Like, it is so crazy. So this book basically is, of course, narrated by Dr. Manhattan, and he basically tells his story of how he left his world and where he ended.
The Watchmen world that we know of.
Yeah, the Watchmen's world, universe, whatever, and how he entered this new universe. Because he even says,
yes.
Let me see if I can find it real quick. I can't remember if he talks to somebody specifically, but he pretty much says, hey, I'm leaving this universe and I'm going somewhere else.
Yes, they do kind of flash that back.
He talks to Ozymandias. Yeah. He says, I'm leaving this galaxy for one less complicated. Yeah. And he ends up popping up in Hollywood where this young actor is, or wannabe actor, and basically saves his life because these police officers are being jerks and just like hit him over the head for no freaking reason.
But it's important to say that when he comes back, this is not like going back to another world like in the 80s, like what you know in the Watchmen universe. This is actually now in 1938.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a very important year for a reason.
So it's 1938. He's trying, and like he is realizing that he can't look into the future, and he's trying and he's trying, but he does have most of his powers because he is able to mask his nakedness to the waitress, and so this guy is just talking to him. While Manhattan is trying to look into the future, he sees a small glimpse and he goes back, and then he's like, okay, let me see if I can move a little bit further and a little bit further and a little bit further. And so he sees all the way until 1955, where he no longer sees the actor sitting in front of him. And that's when you hear the radio say something about a man who lifted a car over his head, and immediately thought of Superman, Action Comics number one. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you see. You see the next panel of the crashed car, and so Dr. Manhattan stays at that one place, and he goes back in time to see it, and it almost looks like Superman looks at him.
Yes.
But I don't think he went back in time. He was only looking back in time. And then all of a sudden, you know, it talks about what we had seen in previous issues of Doomsday Clock with Alan Scott, with all the heroes of the JSA, how they assemble. And you see Johnny with the magic thunderbolt. And the next thing you know, after you see the thunderbolt, it's like as if nothing had happened. Like, there's no JSA.
Exactly, and I think that that's really important, because I remember when this picture popped up, a lot of people were wondering, like, why don't you see, like, the JSA, like, on the table? And this is just something that Dr. Manhattan has found such interest in what this Superman character is, that he is kind of seeing, like, what influence does he have with this JSA that he has found. He wants to know, okay, well, it looks like he's also played a really big role with these heroes from called the Legion of Superheroes. So now you're just getting Dr. Manhattan, where he is literally kind of like changing Superman's story consistently.
And it's so cool.
And erasing it.
And it's so cool because, like, what we see in this real world, not in comics, but what we see in real time as far as, like, reboots, retellings of origins, and things like that, Geoff Johns has created such an awesome way of making it all continuity because Manhattan is the one changing it.
Yes, that because even though we've always had the idea and the theory from the Rebirth special that's like, oh, Manhattan, he's the one that kind of formed the New 52, you know, like stuff like that, but you've never really had like a concrete evidence. I love that in this way that Geoff Johns, yes, we have the multiverse, and we know that the multiverse is really confusing. What I like is that he's kind of like created that the current DC world, the DC universe that we live in, is now considered like what he's considering like the metaverse, which it seems that every decision, anything that happens here is also reflecting in the world around it. So there's a ripple effect everywhere.
Yeah.
And I find that to be genius. It actually, I love to see here with Dr. Manhattan, because, you know, you keep on seeing him with this guy, Carver, and exactly what's going on. And Carver, he's just kind of like giving him enough information about what his life's going to look like in the future, not knowing that, yes, it looks like his life has been benefiting, not knowing that Dr. Manhattan has been completely just playing him.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, I was like, you're starting to see a little by little things unraveling. This is when I found it what I love the most, because it makes you wonder, you know, exactly what you were saying, like what Dr. Manhattan has been doing, which is they show pretty much all the different origin stories of Superman.
Yeah.
And that was nuts from when they're talking about with what happened in 1956. You're seeing later on in the, I believe it was 1986, which is right after Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yep.
Then you have, they even showed like the Mark Waid's run with Lionel Francis Yu. You have Superman Birthright.
Yep.
Which was another one. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what is happening here? Like, this is nuts. Then they talk about at the very end, you kind of see the crash with the parents, where this is the Superman that he can kind of connect, the one that's a little bit more distant from humanity.
Yeah.
Because this was a Clark Kent that lost his parents at a much younger age. And, dude, I'm like, oh my gosh, what has he done? And I don't know, man, because seeing like a Manhattan, and then I love like here even at the end you kind of see the New 52, because you see like the Grant Morrison chip,
yeah,
which was real nice, you know. And there were many very nice, beautiful odds. But then this is when things get the most excited, because when you're seeing changes happening entering like the New 52, we get introduced to a certain speedster who has been now, who is getting stuck in the in the Speed Force, and it is indeed Wally West. And he's like, whatever you did, they'll stop you.
But do you know what the crazy thing about that is?
Mm.
It literally happens right when you see New 52 Superman. So this happened at the beginning of New 52. The point that mm-hmm. Wally saw Manhattan was at the beginning of New 52. And then Wally was able to escape the Speed Force at the end of New 52 and the beginning of Rebirth. That is awesome.
Yes.
I really appreciate that. I appreciate, like that kind of opened up Manhattan's eyes to, like, man, these heroes, these costumed people, are very stubborn in their ways of wanting to protect this world and do what they do. So, like, he's basically seeing, even with messing with Superman's timeline, Superman is still such an influence. And I think that is so cool.
And I love the fact that it seems that John, even though he wanted to leave his world for a less complicated one, he's actually complicated things.
Yeah.
And he realizes that he is like the enemy of his own story.
Yep.
And it's coming back to haunt him. Because after he realizes that, the only imagery that he is getting is now of an enraged Superman that is furious and charging him, and is pretty much, it looks like if he lands the blow, because then it goes all dark, so you kind of don't really know what's happening here. And I love that he goes, and he has found me, and he destroys me, or I destroy the metaverse.
Mm-hmm.
Which is destroying the metaverse, again, is this current canon world that we know of.
So,
which kind of implies what the hell is going to happen to the DCU.
I was going to say, it implies that one thing that I'm kind of scared of is it implies that this might be a new way for that DC has convinced Geoff Johns, hey, we're going to reboot again, and this will be the way they do it.
I believe
that was one of my thoughts. I hope not, but that was one of my thoughts.
I mean, again, it all depends on what's the.
But see,
I guess it's like, I need to know what the plan is. Like, because if you're telling me that if this is going to be kind of like how the story ends, and we're getting a Geoff Johns taking an active role again in comics,
I would be down.
Then I'm down. It's just I need to know what is it, because we do know Snyder is going to be taking a back seat.
Yeah,
because he's going to, after his Justice League run, which I believe ends sometime after the summer of next year, because that's when the last big Justice League event of his story that he's been doing since, even I guess you could say since Metal and No Justice and all that kind of stuff, it ends there. I mean, we're going to need that big writer to kind of take control. I don't believe it's going to be Bendis, because I think Bendis is doing that job, that part right now with what he's trying to do with Leviathan. And I think that's going to be the big thing leading up to whatever the ending is going to be for Doomsday Clock.
Yeah.
So,
well, and if, I was going to say also,
with Johns, I'm good.
Yeah. I was going to say also that it may not be a complete reboot, is because a lot of people have already explained that some of their stories take place after Doomsday Clock. You know, Bendis has said that. I think Snyder has said his Justice League takes place after Doomsday
Clock. There's certain things. Like, we've seen some of it already.
So
I think as recent as, like, last issue.
Yeah. So we... Yeah. Let's see what goes on here. But I will say, like, with every delay, every issue still gets me hyped up for every single issue that comes out.
That's why I've been saying that with this book, every book has been worth the wait. Now, would it be nicer if I'm getting this monthly? Sure. But I feel like this book has done enough to where every issue kind of makes me feel like it's worth waiting the 2 months.
Yeah, for sure.
But that could just be me. But with that being said, with all the heaviness of these books, both sad but also freaking adrenaline pumping, I'm exhausted. Just talking, just four books. And they were, for the most part, they were all I would say above average. They were all good to great. This was a really good week. This is supposed to be annuals week, and this annuals week kicked my ass because of how great how great the books were in total. But yeah, with that being said, we're gonna wrap up the show. But Clay, where can they find you?
Of course, you can find me at my own personal Twitter at FanboyClay. You can find the Fanboy Comics podcast show at Fanboy Comics Pod. You can email me on that show, fanboycomicspodcast@gmail.com. You can find me and Mark on the Comic Book Legion Twitter, CB_Legion, where we've been actually pretty active on that Twitter account. Have gotten some really cool interactions with some really awesome questions that we've kind of brought up recently. Loving, you know, the first book you've ever gotten was one of the questions that Mark brought up.
Yeah.
For me, it was if you could have one control over a live action show on the DC Universe app, that got a lot of interaction as well. Or if two heroes were to trade places in Marvel and DC, things like that. Really good interaction. That I love interaction with you guys, with the listeners. So we want more of that. I'm gonna try to be a little bit more active on that Twitter account to talk to you guys. Mark, where can they find you?
Well, I changed my Twitter name. So it is Mark Reads Comics. I always wonder. I'm like, man, but what if people don't know how to spell my last name because it's weird? So I figured, like, but it's also I like to read comics. My name's Mark, and I read comics. So I have so many mutuals that have something that's pretty similar, and it just says reads comics after that. And I'm like, you know what? I'll be a follower here, and I'll follow along and just Mark Reads Comics. So find me there, and like as Clay mentioned, CB_Legion. And from there, yeah, man, it's all good. And we actually have a giveaway. I don't know exactly the parameters that we're going to be doing it, but I actually have a signed Detective Comics 1000 issue, and it's actually signed by Peter Tomasi and Greg Capullo. It is the Miko Suyen, one of his variants, because I believe he did two or three variants.
He did three variants two variants for Unknown Comics in Texas, Amarillo, Texas.
Okay, so this one here is, if you wanted to look, it's pretty much looking at Bruce, and then on the bottom you see his entire, like, the Bat family.
Is it the one with the statues?
And then, yes, with the statues of the rogues.
Yeah, I have that book.
Yes. So that variant, I have that one, and yes, it is signed by Tomasi and Capullo. I got it signed while I was at MegaCon Orlando. So I don't have a certificate of authenticity, but, I mean, you can look at my Twitter page where I took a picture with all. I was at a Batman VIP panel, so that's the only proof that I have that I can give you. So if that's good enough, yes, we'll figure out, Clay and I, which would be the best way to do that one. And then from there, you know, we'll do that giveaway and send it out to you. But with that being said, Clay, do we got anything else?
Nope, I think that's it, man.
Sweet. So then we will talk to you guys next week.
All right.
See ya.
Later.